Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vistaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vananta Samane Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Namaste Sasuni Vade Paskati Tesatarane Om Gurudev Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Janabhutale Sayam Upakadamayam Vatati Sapanadikam Manishakopajubhishya Kibhishamavayabhishya Patitanam Mavayam Vaisarayam Vaisarayam We'll read the fourth of the texts again. First, we'll just go over the meaning. Anarpita Sharim Sharat. So that is Anarpita. Anarpita Sharim Sharat. It has not been bestowed for a long time. Kurunaya Vatirno Kalo. So by causeless mercy, descended in the Kalo, in the age of Kali, samarpayitum, to bestow unata elevated ujjararasam, the conjugal mellow, the most wonderful relationship with Krishna, the most intimate and wonderful, swabhakti of his own shriyam, this treasure of his own bhakti. So even though he's Krishna Chaitanya, he's come to bestow the mellow of service, the most intimate service to him. And the reasons why he's done this will be described gradually. Wonderful reasons why he's done this. He's come. Hari Purita Sundaram Sundara. So Hari, the Supreme Lord, Purita, Sundara, more beautiful than Purita Sundara Dhuti, more beautiful than the splendor of gold, of molten gold, so effulgent, so golden, so wonderful. Kadamba, Sandipitaha, Sada, Ridaya Kandare. Spurito. May this Lord be always manifest within the core or the cave of your heart. Spurito manifest. And who is this? This is Vasachinandana. The cave of your heart, the core of your heart. May this Sachinandana, the son of Mother Sachi, see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, see Krishna Chaitanya. What's another name of Krishna Chaitanya, especially during his early days? Nimai Pandit, Vishwambar, and Gaurahari. He started being called Gaurahari after he began manifesting the Sankirtan movement. Vishwambar was the name given by the Nilambara Chakravarti. His mother's father, a great scholar and astrologer, because he would be maintaining the whole universe with his distribution of love of Krishna. And Nimai Pandit, given by the ladies, because he was born under a neem tree, and he turned out to be the greatest, the most the mighty genius of Nadia. Bhaktivinoda Thakur called him incredible. When you read in Chaitanya Bhagavat what an incredible genius he was, that at the age of 14, 15, 13, he was able, practically speaking, to defeat everyone in the town of Navadvip, which was famous for its scholars. There were scholars everywhere, and he was able to defeat everyone, and yet He would do it in such a way that he wouldn't humiliate them or embarrass them, but they would feel great affection for him. So, this is the fourth of the verses. Who remembers what the first one described? Obeisances, yes. Obeisances to the different aspects of Mahaprabhu. These are different. They're all these aspects, and we'll be talking about this later. We'll hear Prabhupada talk about it, actually. How these are all different aspects of Mahaprabhu, because he is the absolute truth. And then, second text, Bandhe Sri Krishna Nityananda, the holy tale. The sun and the moon arise together to dispel all the darkness and wonderfully bestow the benediction upon all. The third verse saying, who is this Mahaprabhu and how is he understood? What the Upanishads describe as the impersonal Brahman, so because he's the absolute truth. The religionists, they know that absolute truth is impersonal, and one even sees this even in the religions of the mlechas, what to speak of the Vedic religions, everyone, or even the New Age religions, they all have an impersonal conception of the absolute. And even though Buddhism is becoming so popular, practically speaking, it's the same. It's just covered in personalism. It's like if we say that everyone in the room is teaching tonight. So practically speaking, there's no difference between saying everyone in the room is teaching and no one in the room is teaching. Because if everyone is teaching, practically speaking, no one is teaching. So Buddhism says there's no supreme, and impersonalism says everyone is the supreme, Namo Narayan. I even see that in Vrindavan, the impersonalists, when they see each other, the impersonal sannyasis, say Namo Narayan. I offer up my obeisances to you, who is Narayan, the supreme Lord. So what the Upanishads describe as the impersonal Brahman is but the effulgence of his body. So all these are aspects of the absolute truth are described in relationship to Mahaprabhu. And the Lord known as the Super Soul is but his localized plenary portion. And Lord Chaitanya is the supreme personality of Godhead. He is Bhagavan, Krishna himself, full with six opulences. So this, the understanding of Krishna is very, very difficult. Not to speak of love of Krishna, because persons do perform so-called bhakti yoga, because the Bhagavad Gita clearly teaches that bhakti is superior to other paths in the 12th chapter, because it's so much easier than klesham, dikataras, tesham, avyakta, vyakta, murtinam. It's so much easier than meditation on something that's formless, because it's so difficult to how do you meditate on something that's formless? How do you do it? You can't do it. How can you meditate on something that has no aspects or qualities to meditate upon? Because the material world is so tangible, so everyone's mind just jumps from one material thing to the next under the pretext of meditating on something impersonal or void. It can't be done, practically speaking, because the mind needs an object. So what the impersonalists do, they say, well, before your mind can actually do this, what you do is focus it on one thing. So you can focus it on a mantra, you can focus it on your bhakti, but they perceive bhakti as like climbing a ladder to go over the wall. And then when you get to the top of the wall, what do you do with the ladder? You just kick it. You just kick it away. So that's so different from bhakti. Bhakti is devotion. So they'll worship the deity to become the deity. So is that devotion? So it's actually offensive. Just like if you're in an office and you're serving the boss very carefully and seemingly devotedly, but if your motive is to become the boss, when the boss understands your motive, is he going to appreciate your service? Because no, in fact, it's not even service. It's completely self-motivated. It's not actually devotion. Like the child who's taking care of his elderly parents just to get the inheritance or something like that. There's no devotion in that at all. It's all selfish. And devotion, on the other hand, is defined as what? Anya abhilasita sunyam. There is no other desire. Abhilasi is desire. Anya, other. There's no other desires other than to please Krishna. Sunyam. It all becomes zero. So that's devotion. When you're actually trying to please the person. And that's why devotional service gets at the heart of our material existence, and as Kapila Muni describes, it dissolves material existence at the core, because one's identity actually has to change at the core level. One's self-conception, one's view of oneself, one's ahankar has to be dissolved from false sense of independence from Krishna to I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine. So one actually has to inculcate on the deepest level that sense of identity. Then it is pure devotional service, and that is called Sharanagati or surrender. When one gives up the false sense but accepts who one actually is, Jivera Sarupoi Krishner Nityadas, we are Krishna's. So that is the level on which bhakti or devotion actually begins. And Krishna taught this. He taught Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Shami Masucha, that I'll protect you and everything, but first there is surrender. First you surrender. But because that's so difficult to do for a conditioned soul, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going to remove that prerequisite. Just chant Hare Krishna, whatever your position is. Just chant Hare Krishna. And then gradually, as one's devotion develops for Krishna, then surrender is fully natural. In Kali Yuga, why is surrender difficult? Don't have any faith, don't have any trust. Yeah, why is there no faith and no trust in Kali Yuga? Because every authority in this world proves itself untrustworthy, practically speaking. And the more Kali Yuga goes on, because there's the culture and which one is brought up in, that so much affects on one level, it affects one's the constructs, conceptual constructs of one's consciousness, how one perceives the world. And in Kali Yuga, everyone's upbringing is awful, terrible. And why do people have this upbringing? Because in previous ages, people have done horrible things that get them this type of insecurity where. Because the first years of one's life, everyone says this, from Prabhupada to the Pope to Freud, the first years of one's life dictate how one views the universe, one's conceptions of reality are hardened, and everything else is sort of acting out the first 5 years, the rest of one's life, in one sense. And then one could also take it a step further back, that the previous birth dictates how you see the world now. This is actually described in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, the present. You can tell the future and the past by the present. By one's present mentality indicates the past mentality, because due to the past mentality, we've gotten this mentality. And then according to our mentality now, we'll get a mentality in the future. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being the very merciful Karunya Avatiro, Kalo, in Kali Yuga, he's a very merciful incarnation. He just, whatever you are, whatever your conceptions are, just chant Hare Krishna. And the bliss of Vaikuntha descends when one chants Hare Krishna. It dissolves Chaito Dharpanam Arjunam. It cleanses the heart, regardless of what one's situation is in. And yet, also, he gives the most wonderful thing, not a Kali Yuga cheap, lesser quality, but rather, out of his mercy, even in Kali Yuga, he gives the highest of all possible things. And we'll hear Prabhupada again speaking about this later. He shows the fullest range. He demonstrates what is the most, when you take love of God, because a religion often will say that love of God is its goal, but he shows the topmost or the most extreme intimacy in the loving relationship with Krishna. And then he explains what the methodology is of achieving it. And it's like when Mahaprabhu was traveling in what's now Bangladesh, Purvadesh, the eastern part of Bengal, when he was just coming back, one Brahmin came to him named Tapan Misra, who, he was a devotee, but he didn't know actually what the goal of religion was, the goal of his practices, nor did he know how to achieve it. And then he had a dream, that in that dream, a Brahmin came and told him that you go and see this Nimai Pandit who is nearby. So he went to Nimai Pandit, and he said, he fell down and explained everything, and he said, I'm confused about what the goal of life is and the method of achieving it. And Mahaprabhu just told him that you just chant Hare Krishna and everything, you'll understand everything by that. And of course the teachings of Mahaprabhu will explain everything, but yet he said very wonderful, simple and wonderful pastime. And then of course Tapan Misra immediately said, I want to stay with you, because in your association it's like being with the sun. There is no question of darkness. So I want to stay with you. And Mahaprabhu said, no, you go to Benares and you go live there, and then I'll see you at a different time. Because Krishna and Krishna Chaitanya, they have their plans. And although because we don't have much faith in Kali Yuga, we would like to know everything in advance. But of course, also it's impossible for us to know everything in advance, because only Krishna knows everything in advance. And if we want to be Krishna, thinking that will solve all our problems, then we're back to the beginning again, having to understand that we're not Krishna, we're servants of Krishna. But Krishna does have his plans. So in any case, this Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what the Upanishads describe as the impersonal Brahman, is the effulgence of his body, and the Lord, known as the Supersoul, is but his localized plenary portion. Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself, full with six opulences. He is the absolute truth, and no other truth is greater than or equal to him. So this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then the fourth verse, which we just went over again. May the Supreme Lord, who is known as the son of Srimati Sachim Devi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost chambers of your heart. Resplendent with the radiance of molten gold, he has appeared in the age of Kali by his causeless mercy to bestow what no incarnation has ever offered before, the most sublime and radiant mellow of devotional service, the mellow of conjugal love. So what does Kali mean? The age of Kali. It is the Iron Age. It is the Iron Age of quarrel, specifically. This is Kali's specific function, to introduce quarrel. And what is the cause of quarrel in Kali Yuga? Yeah, on a less okay, just one level. Yeah, that is all is true. I'm thinking of something specific. It's sort of not anything so very specific, but just in Kali Yuga, because of these reasons, everything is a cause of quarrel. Because everyone has huge false egos in Kali Yuga. The walls of their false egos are very, very thick. And no one can accept authority, and no one can accept Krishna is the ultimate controller, so everyone's false ego is very, very, very thick. So therefore, everything becomes a cause of quarrel. And this, again, is a specific quality of Kali Yuga. Everyone's mind is disturbed, upadrutaha. And therefore, because of the deep dissatisfaction within everyone's heart, quarrel is so manifest. So therefore, the process is chanting Hare Krishna. And getting mercy of Mahaprabhu. So, fifth verse. Radha Krishna Pranaya Vakriti Ladini Shakti Asmad Ekapmana Vapibhu Viporadeya Vedam Gato Tau Chaitanyakam Prakatam Aduna Taddayam Chakyamaptam Varabhavaduti Suvalalitam Nomi Krishna Sarupam. The loving affairs of Sri Radha and Krishna are transcendental manifestations of the Lord's internal pleasure-giving potency. Although Radha and Krishna are one in their identity, and this will be explained in great detail, Radha and Krishna are the same. It's Krishna and his primal energy, his Ladini Shakti, his internal energy. So, oh, they are one in their identity. They are one in their identity. And all their dealings, the dealings between Radha and Krishna, are all manifestations of Ladini Shakti Asmad. They are all manifestations of Krishna's internal potency. So, the opposite of that is that they are manifestations of the external potency. The dealings between males and females in this world are all manifestation of the external potency, Maya. And what is the difference between Maya and Yoga Maya? Yoga Maya's business is to place Krishna in the center. It is made for his pleasure. And Mahamaya, being a reflection or refraction of Yoga Maya within the material world, it's to illusion the living entities who are covered by false ego, who are thinking that they will be happy with themselves in the center, to give them a facility to act as if they were the center of the existence. Just try. Just try. You want to be happy with yourself in the center? Okay, just try. You want to be the controller and the enjoyer? Just try. It's actually impossible for you. But due to this, because we're just tiny, insignificant parts and parcels of Krishna, like sparks. So just try. And because it's not possible, we'll give you the illusion, an illusory world where so many living entities can all at the same time be trying to be the center. And therefore, the result of unlimited living entities all trying to be the center and try to convince all the other living entities that they are the center is chaos and so much distress, so much undue competition. That's the material world, the illusion of being the center. We can never be anything other than what we are. We can, in an illusory sense, forget what we are and think we're something other than what we are, just like when we're dreaming. We're lying in our bed and we're dreaming that... anyone have any good dreams lately? Flying? Are there any flyers in the room? Sharanagati, do you fly in your dreams? No. You're earthbound. Just so many different kinds of dreams, and we're thinking we're doing this and we're doing good things or we're doing bad things, but all we are is just we're lying on the bed in illusion. We're thinking something, that we're doing something. Sometimes you even see dogs when they're sleeping. Their legs are running and running and running. They're dreaming that they're running and running and running, but they're just on their sides. You see, on their sides, and they're just dreaming. So they're not doing anything, going anywhere. So similarly, so many times in the Bhagavatam, I've seen this many times, how when the question is asked, what is the relationship between the pure soul and this material world? And all the activities that we perform in the material world, in the body, so many times in so many places, it's simply compared to an illusion, a dream. It's a dream. So when someone is in a dream world, the best thing to do is to wake the person up. As we always talk about, the poor fellow in his dream is being eaten by a tiger. What's the use of driving away that illusory dream tiger? Better to just simply wake the person up. So it's so awkward for the soul, because here the material world seems so real for us. And yet we're being told it's an illusion, it's a dream. And the spiritual world seems so dreamlike to us. And we're being told that that's reality. So what really, of course, has to happen is that the spiritual world, we have to, when we wake up, sometimes when there's a half-dreaming state, or just before one's waking up, one's sort of in the dream but knows that one is actually only dreaming. And then it's such a relief, that feeling. And sometimes one knows that one can wake up if one wants to. You ever have that experience when you're dreaming? And then you force yourself awake when there's a bad dream? Yes? So that you have to have a certain level of consciousness before you can do that. No, this isn't my life. And therefore, sometimes it was so difficult in one sense to talk to Prabhupada, because his vision of your problems was so different. It's like, you know, you don't understand, this tiger is eating me. Just chant Hare Krishna. Difficult for sleeping soul who's fully immersed in the dream. Very difficult. So very difficult situation we're actually in. So we could say, so there's different ways to deal with that, the difficulty of the situation where the dream appears more real than the reality. And then the soul is always thinking, well, how do I actually really know that it really is there? So these are the issues of spiritual life. How do you really know that it's there? And one answer is, it's your business to find out. And don't think, because if you don't think that other things are more important than finding out, and gathering your own wealth of experience on it, Because if you want to live in the dream world, well, guess what? Eventually you're going to be confronted with the fact that ultimately it is a dream, because the dream starts crumbling and you may be dreaming that you're a king or a queen or you're very, very wealthy or something, but it's going to crumble one day. It has to crumble. It actually starts crumbling before your very eyes when you're getting old, when the body starts aging. It starts to crumble before your eyes, but no one wants to acknowledge it. No one wants to think about the illusion is going to crumble. What's the main illusion? Is that the Atma Buddhi, the consciousness or the intelligence that I'm my body, it's going to crumble. And if we've spent our life identifying with the illusion, how unnerving it's going to be, how shocking it's going to be, how disconcerting it's going to be. What's some other good words to describe? It's terrifying when it all starts crumbling. So it's our business to gain very deep spiritual experience in this life. Otherwise, we shall be disappointed when the illusion starts to crumble. So, in the material world, the illusion appears as reality, and the spiritual world appears as very, very, very distant. So, what is the process, the basic process of bhakti to attain the spiritual experience? It is hearing and chanting, basically, and other forms of service, but it's very, very simple. It's not like the practices of yoga, which are incredible, incredible. Not like the practices of jnana, which are also take incredible renunciation. So it's basically simple. Prabhupada would always insist on this. It's so simple. Even a child can participate in the chanting, dancing, taking prasadam. And Mahaprabhu showed that. But he showed how, through having very, very deep consciousness, that even in these simple activities, because they're actually fully potent with spiritual potency, one can actually achieve the most exalted state of spiritual experience. And when, as soon as he takes initiation from Sri Padishwar Puri and starts chanting the Maha Mantra, he describes it. He goes to Ishwar Puri and says, "What kind of mantra have you given me? I find myself, I chant it and I fall to the ground. I fall to the ground, I faint, I cry, I roll on the ground in madness due to the depth of the spiritual experience. I stand up, I jump in the air, I scream, I laugh, I fall to the ground again. What mantra is this you've given me?" And Ishwar Puri said, Mahaprabhu's words describing what Ishwar Puri said, he said, "Oh my child, I'm so happy you're actually getting the effect of chanting this Maha Mantra." Was very pleased. So he was fully waking to his natural state. So Mahaprabhu was going to demonstrate all this. Krishna himself comes as in the mood of a devotee to demonstrate how to actually achieve the highest perfection, the highest perfection, the deepest consciousness, the soul's true nature brought out to the greatest degree. The uncovered, unfettered soul. So here in this fifth verse, it describes the loving affairs of Sri Radha and Krishna, transcendental manifestations of the Lord's internal pleasure-giving potency. So we are meant to attain that service. Although Radha and Krishna are one in their identity, they separated themselves eternally. Now these two transcendental identities have again united in the form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. So Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahayanya, they're the same. Radha and Krishna is Mahaprabhu, Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. I bow down to him who has manifested himself with the sentiment and complexion of Srimati Radharani, although he is Krishna himself. So it's Krishna with the sentiment and complexion of Radharani. So why has he done this? That's the next verse. Desiring to understand the glory of Radharani's love. So there's three reasons. The wonderful qualities in him that she alone relishes through her love. And the happiness she feels when she realizes the sweetness of his love. The Supreme Lord Hari, richly endowed with her emotions, appeared from the womb of Srimati Sachi Devi as the moon appeared from the ocean. So these verses, these first six verses, describe Mahaprabhu. So what are the three again, Jagatvini?
Mahima, the greatness of her love.
So Krishna wants to understand the greatness of Radharani's love.
He wants to understand the Anubhuta Madhurima.
Inconceivable, wonderfully sweetness.
She feels the sweetness of his love. Happiness she feels when she realizes the sweetness of his love. And the middle one is the wonderful qualities that he has because he's a lover.
And so okay, say it again.
Love, the glorious nature of her love, the qualities about him that cause her to love him.
So there's the glory of her love, the happiness. There's the love and the happiness. They're separate.
Yes, there's the love, the person, the wonderful qualities of the person that she loves, and the happiness she feels because she loves
him. Yeah. And that middle one, the qualities, there's another way to describe that too. And that is that due to the love that she has, it brings out specific qualities in him. So he's wondering about that again. It reflects back to the love of her love. These wonderful qualities of him. So again, what the nature of that love that brings out these qualities?
Causes him to be happy, but that causes her to be more happy because she loves him, her love mate. When she sees him happy, she becomes happy.
Yes.
And he feels happy seeing her happy, but she always wins because her love is so great that she always gets through. Becomes more happy seeing him happy than he's capable of feeling happy.
So this is what Mahaprabhu is actually going to teach. How to experience more happiness than God, than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the unique thing that he's giving. And Krishna wants this. This is Krishna's greatest gift. He wants the living entities to experience more bliss than he experiences. And the little, the little tiny insignificant living entity who's trying to be happy in the material world independent of him by creating a situation in which he's imagining that he's the supreme, he's the center, he's the controller, he's the happy, he's the one that everyone should love. So that's the living entity in illusion having turned his back on Krishna. And what is Krishna wanting? To bestow this unnata ujjala rasam sabhaktim, this brightest jewel of love bring that tiny jiva onto a platform of ecstasy that defeats the ecstasy that Krishna himself experiences. So that's quite something.
So he wants to experience what she's experiencing in that position. He wants to change places with her and experience her position of what it's like to love him. What it's like for her.
How perspective would you say? Because the Purusha, the male, can never experience what the female is experiencing, because unless he gives up his Purusha position, his male position. So therefore, this is what's going on here. That Krishna wants to experience on the highest of spiritual platforms. What is her love, her happiness? And what she does that pulls these incredible qualities from him.
And because her love, her devotion is the highest thing, it's higher than him. So Srimati Radharani is considered the topmost devotee. So he wants to become himself a devotee of himself.
Yeah. And there's one example of that's given in one of the purports, which is really in the first canto. I can't remember exactly where it is, or perhaps it's in the third canto or fourth canto, and it's also described in the 12th canto when during the devastation of the universe, there's a Markandeya Rishi. She's Krishna, situated on a banyan, a baby Krishna, little baby Krishna, situated on a banyan leaf, floating in the waters of devastation. And what is he doing? He's sucking his toe. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that this gives, because sucking his toe implies that there's something very, very sweet in the Lord's feet. So the devotees are always serving the Lord's feet, trying to get that sweetness. Mm-hmm. So that from that his feet have. So Krishna himself also wants to find out what is the sweetness of my own feet, that the devotees are always serving my feet and they're mad in ecstasy trying to taste that. So Krishna, wanting to taste the sweetness of his own feet, puts his lotus toes in his mouth. Mm-hmm. So Vishnava Chakravarti Thakur says this hints at the appearance of Mahaprabhu, who wants to taste the sweetness of his own service to his own feet. But the thing that that one has to enter deeply into these things. So and not in the process of just working to forget that the actual process of bhakti that gives power to everything is in the hearing and chanting. So, I'll read that text again. Desiring to understand the glories of Radharani's love, see Radhaya Pranaya Mahima. So that's the pranaya, the love, the greatness of that love. Kidrisa va anayor. what she alone is relishing, the happiness that she alone is relishing through her love. And the happiness she feels when she realizes the sweetness of his love, that's what that one is. That she's giving him so much pleasure. See how selfless. And this, and in the fourth chapter, Krishnadas Kaviraj is going to explain this verse in such a wonderful way that is it's just astounding. And then just to see the simple pureness of the love of the residents of Vrindavan, that they have simply no other, there's not the hint, neither the hint nor the or tinge nor fragrance of any other desire other than to please Krishna. And their happiness is simply his happiness. So when they do something that awards him happiness, Krishna's happiness increases, and therefore, because their happiness is his happiness, their happiness increases. And because the nature of love is so selfless, when Krishna sees their happiness is increased, therefore he becomes so still more happy. So his happiness increases. And when his happiness increases, naturally the gopis think, oh, Krishna is happy. And they become more happy because there's everything is full of such devotion.
So,
yeah. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when I see someone else become happy, I become miserable. And when I see someone else miserable, I become happy. The happiness. Because the essence of the material world is envy. And that envy begins with Krishna. So the solution, there's only one solution to the situation, is turning back to Krishna. And that is generally a gradual process. Why is it a gradual process? Because, but although philosophically we insist that it can be done in half a moment, because all it takes is the soul giving himself to Krishna. But practically speaking, the material mind is like a train going down the track, you know, speeding down the track. Now they have trains that go 180 kilometers an hour, passenger trains, 180 kilometers an hour. So it's speeding down the track at 180 kilometers an hour, which is trying to fulfill its material desires. And the exact opposite, 180 degrees in the exact opposite direction, is trying to please Krishna with intense love. So how can that train just be going 180 miles, kilometers a mile an hour, and then just go, whoop, just doesn't work like that. Usually we have to take our slow, gradual method of turning around. If we try to change very abruptly, okay, I won't go on 180 degrees, but I'll go, it also tends not to work. No, it has to, you end up derailing. But practically speaking, and therefore in the Nectar of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion, it says that no one can take to devotional service just as a product of one life. It takes lives. But if one is doing that, he explains, that means that he's gotten mercy, he's taken to it in previous lives. But yet, you'd have to say that by mercy, all things are possible.
But
of course then we have to put in the caveat at the end saying that, but that doesn't mean that we should say, oh, I can't do very much in this life and therefore I should just take it easy. No, but rather we should rather we should become attracted to Krishna. We should get attracted to Krishna, and but because it's so hard, that's why. But the reason why not, but if one has an attraction to Krishna, if one has an attraction to Krishna, then there is a pull. And then what's pushing on the other side is the fact that what is the benefit, as just saying, as Chaitanya said, what is the benefit of clinging to the illusion when we know that the time of the mandatory breaking of the illusion is coming. Death is coming, and it's coming for everyone. And no one knows when. I remember in the 60s on a New York subway, there was a big graffiti sign that I saw, abolish compulsory reincarnation. Because everyone was protesting things. But someone had a real New York sense of humor. But we can't abolish it because it is compulsory. And protesting and being angry about it just doesn't do anything. But the depth of the spiritual experience and really help. It's of a different level. Okay. Any questions or comments? We finished reading the verses on up to 6. And what I would like to do is go over these a few times from different points of view, so we get a feel for these 14 verses, these different tattvas and the different points in them. Any questions or comments?
It seems like it's really important to, like, when we were talking about the Panchatattva before yesterday, and when you described it today, I noticed that you said these are all aspects of Lord Chaitanya. And I remember when I read these particular verses, I would be trying to understand them, but you have to keep putting them beside each other as evidences together, so to speak, to keep remembering who Lord Chaitanya is, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, Krishna is this, if Lord Chaitanya is this, why this, because this, you have to keep referring to them because they're the basic truth.
It holds everything up, you see.
And I'm studying, but it's a challenge at different points in this
degree. So what we'll do is we'll go over it a few times, perhaps from different points of view, because that's basically what Krishna's Kaviraj does. He goes over it, he talks about the verses and expands it. In a very, very sweet way. So that sixth verse again explains the internal reasons for the Mahaprabhu's own reasons for his coming. What he was personally trying to gain. But of course, anyway, we'll talk about all the different points. Because if someone is trying to gain something, we've just said that he's God. So if he wants to gain something, the implication is that he's lacking something. So this doesn't work on the absolute platform. Yeah. He's always, yeah.
They separated themselves eternally, and now they have been united.
But now they're eternally now united. Mahaprabhu is also there. Yes,
simultaneously.
And it's interesting that. Anyway, we'll there's things to talk about tomorrow.
If Krishna really, which is Krishna.
It's all Krishna and Radha and Vrindavan and Mahaprabhu and Navadvip. And
it's all that expanding
to
Krishna.
If you talk about it being eternally, you know, different metaphysical ways of looking at that, you know, where the, you could say that it starts with Radha and Krishna and then they combine as Mahaprabhu, but that's, I don't think that's exactly correct. At it like that, I guess that's how you can look at it.
But isn't it, I'm not trying.
But Mahaprabhu, no, anyway, it's better not to talk about that one right now, because that's it. It's a big topic, and it's 8:30. An answer to point. But it's probably better that we don't start this discussion now. Oh.